why not push ahead? Get the hell out of this mess as quick as we can. Craig seemed to think it over carefully. Hell of it is, we got some nice smooth territory here. Pretty easy driving. The land outside was not entirely free of rocks, but it was much more open and flat than the broken and boulder-strewn region of Xanthi they had been through. The ground was sloping downward gently, generally trending toward the lowlands of the Ares Vallis region. "We're going to turn this route into a regular excursion for the tourists, Wiley," Dex said, mainly to take his mind off the ominous cloud spreading across the horizon before them. "Build a road out here?" "Won't need a road. We'll put up a cable car system, like they're doing on the moon. Just put up poles every 100 meters or so and string a line between them. The cars hang from the line and zip along. Whoosh!" Dex made a swooping motion with one hand. Craig fell into the game. "The cable carries the electrical current to run the cars, huh?" "Right," Dex said, trying not to look out at the horizon. "Cars can carry a couple dozen people. They're sealed like spacecraft, carry their own air, heat, just like this rover." "Only they skim over the ground," Craig said. "They'll be able to go a lot faster that way. 100 clicks an hour, maybe." Without taking his eyes from his driving, Craig said softly, "Wish we had one of them now." Dex stared out the windshield. It was starting to get dark out there. The mammoth cloud of dust was coming toward them like a vast Mongol horde of conquerors. Soon it would engulf them entirely and they would be lost in the dark. He shivered involuntarily. Jamie was outside with Rodriguez, adding extra tie-down lines to the planes when the call from Connors came through. Inside his heart suit, he could not see the former astronaut, only hear his caramel-rich baritone voice. Connors sounded concerned, worried. "He's on the warpath, Jamie. I just heard about it from Dr. Lee. Old man Trumbull called him and raised hell about you. He's calling everybody on the ICU board. God knows who else he's bitching to." Jamie had asked that Connors' call be put on the personal frequency so that he could listen to the man in privacy. "I don't need this," he muttered as he tugged at the line that held the soar plane's wingtip to one of the bolts they had sunk into the ground. Connors' voice went on, unhearing, more than 100 million kilometers away. "I've talked to several of the board members myself. None of them really wants to remove you, but they're pretty scared of Trumbull. He must be threatening to cut off funding for the next expedition." Straightening in the hard suit was not an easy task. Jamie found himself puffing with exertion as he looked back toward the dome. Fuchida and Dezhirova were in the garden bubble, carefully checking its plastic skin for pinhole leaks or wrinkles where the wind might grab and tear the fabric apart. "Once the dust starts blowing, will the particles have enough force in them to penetrate the bubble's skin?" he wondered. Not likely, but then the odds against the dome being hit by meteoroids were 1,000,000,000 to 1. Connors was still droning on. "I had a long talk with Father DiNardo about it. He's a damned good politician, that Jesuit, you know that? He says you should sit tight and ignore the whole thing. It'll probably blow over as soon as the storm dissipates and Trumbull realizes nothing's happened to his son." Jamie nodded inside his helmet as he walked over to the soar plane's other wingtip and started tightening the lines already fastened there. "DiNardo said," Connors continued, "that you shouldn't even think about resigning unless Trumbull keeps up the pressure even after the storm blows out and it becomes clear that a majority of the board's going to go along with him." "Resigning?" Jamie said aloud. "He thinks I should resign?" Connors went on with his dolorous report, reminding Jamie several times more that he hated to bother him with this political maneuvering, but he thought Jamie ought to know about it. Finally, he said, "Well, that's the whole story up to now. I'll wait for your answer. Be sure you mark it personal to me, that way nobody else will look at it. At least nobody else should look at it. I don't know how many people around here are reporting to Trumbull on the sly." "Wonderful news," Jamie groaned silently. "Well, okay, that's it, pal. I'll wait for your answer. Bye for now." Off on the eastern horizon, Jamie saw the sky was darkening. "Or is it just my imagination?" he asked himself. "I'll check the instrumentation when I get back into the dome. The storm's going to hit here, but it's probably too early to see it yet. And now I've got another storm, a political storm back on Earth." The Navajo believe that clouds are the spirits of the dead, Jamie remembered. Will you come to visit me in a cloud, Grandfather? Or will it be the spirits from the long walk come to take their vengeance on the whites who drove them off their land? He shook his head to clear it of such irrational thoughts, then glanced down at the suit radio's keypad on his wrist. Jamie said carefully, "Personal message to Pete Connors at Tarawa. Pete, I got your message. We're battening down for the storm right now, so I don't have time to reply at length. I want to think about this before I answer you anyway. Thanks for the news, I guess. I'll get back to you." Damn, he thought as he stared out at the eastern horizon. It sure looks like it's clouding up out there. Maybe the storm's picked up speed. That'd be good. It'll roll over Dex and Craig and get them out into the clear sooner. Starting back toward the dome's airlock, Jamie said to himself, "Why is Trumbull so clanked up? Why is he out to remove me as mission director? Prejudice? Just plain malice? Or is he the type that's not happy unless he's forcing other people to jump through his hoops?" Then Jamie heard his grandfather whisper, "Put yourself in his shoes. Find what's bothering him." "Okay, Grandfather," he replied silently. "What's bothering the old man?" "His son is in danger," came the immediate reply. "He's worried about Dex's safety." "That's natural. That's good. But Trumbull knew that exploring Mars carried its risks. Maybe he never considered that his own son would have to face those risks, just like the rest of us. He was all in favor of going after the Pathfinder hardware, but he didn't think his son would go on the excursion and place himself in danger. Now he knows differently, and he's scared. He's sitting in an office in Boston, and his son is out in the middle of a dust storm 100 million kilometers away, and there's nothing he can do about it, except get angry and vent his fury on the most convenient target he can find, the mission director who allowed his son to go out into danger, me. He's pissed at me because he can't do anything else about the situation. He's scared and frustrated and trying to solve his problem the way he solved problems before. Fire the guy he's mad at." Jamie took a deep breath and felt a calm warmth flow through him. He heard his grandfather's gentle laughter. "Never lose your temper with a customer," his grandfather had told him years ago, when Jamie had been a little boy, angered by the pushy, demanding, loud-mouthed tourists who yelled at Al in his shop. "Let 'em whoop and holler. It doesn't matter. Once they calm down, they're so ashamed of themselves that they buy twice what they started out to buy just to show they're sorry." "Damn," Jamie said to himself as he trudged back to the airlock. It would be so satisfying to get sore at Trumbull, to send him a blistering message telling him to mind his own damned business. So easy to taunt the old man from 100 million kilometers distance. But I can't get angry at him, Jamie realized. I understand what he's going through. I understand him, and you can't hate a man you understand. As he stepped into the airlock and swung its outer hatch shut, he reminded himself, but just because you understand him doesn't mean he can't hurt you. You understand a rattlesnake, too, but you don't let him bite you. Not if you can avoid it. "That's all she wrote," said Craig. He touched the brakes and brought the rover to a gentle stop. "It's not even 6 o'clock yet, Wiley," Dex protested. "We can get in another hour or more." Craig got up from the driver's seat. "I got an idea." The sky was a dismal gray above them, getting darker by the minute. Dex could hear the wind now, a thin, screeching sound like the wail of a distant banshee. "I'll drive," he offered. "Nope," said Craig, heading back toward the bunks. "You gotta know when to hold 'em and know when to fold 'em. We sit still now and get ready for the storm." "It's not that bad yet," Dex insisted, turning in a seat to watch the older man. "We can push on a little more, at least." Craig knelt down and pulled open a storage drawer beneath the bottom bunk. "The real danger from the storm's gonna be the damage the sand does to our solar panels, right?" "Right," Dex answered, wondering what his partner was up to. Craig pulled a set of sheets from the storage drawer. "So we cover the solar panels." "Cover them? With bed sheets?" "And anything else we got," Craig said. "Coveralls, plastic wrap, anything we got." but once they're covered, they'll stop producing electricity for us.